Parshat Vayigash begins with Yehuda pleading the case for Binyamin, and Yosef ultimately revealing himself to the brothers, saying, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef, Ha'ud Avichai, is my father still alive? And Yosef says to the brothers that they should not feel bad for what they've done, because it was really HaKadosh Baruch Hu directing the whole sequence of events, that Yosef would now be in a position of being able to support the brothers and their entire families. Yosef then tells the brothers to go up and tell their father that he's still alive, and he invites all of them to come down to Egypt and sends them the necessary wagons in order for them to come down to Egypt. And the Torah tells us they went up from Egypt and came to the land of Canaan to Yaakov, their father, and they told him, saying, Yosef is still alive, or so that he is ruler over all the land of Egypt. But his heart rejected it, for he could not believe them. However, when they related to him all the words that Yosef had spoken to them, and he saw the wagons that Yosef had sent to transport him, then the spirit of their father Yaakov was revived, and Israel said, How great my son Yosef still lives, I shall go and see him before I die. And the question that the Mefarshim deal with is, what was it in the words of Yosef? And in particular, what was it in the wagons that Yaakov Avinu saw that allowed Yaakov Avinu's spirit to be revived, that he believed that indeed Yosef was still alive? It seems from the pasuk that it was not only the words that were spoken, but specifically, and he saw the wagons that Yosef had sent to transport him, that this is what revived Yaakov's spirit. And this Rashi notes, based on the Medrash, that Yosef used the wagons to remind Yaakov of the last topic they were learning when he left home that fateful day 22 years previously. The Egla Rufa, the calf that is beheaded by the elders of the city closest to where murdered body is found, without any clues pointing to the murderer. The word Egla, calf, is hinted to in Agala, wagon, because basically Agala and Egla are the same word with a different vocalization. Let's try to explain this Medrash and then see the deeper aspects behind this Medrash. We know that there's a halacha found in the end of Parsha Choftim that if a person should die and no one knows who killed the person, so the elders in a nearby city have to go and they behead, they cut off the back of a young calf's neck, and they wash their hands and they make the statement of saying, they shall speak up and say, the Torah tells us, our hands have not spilled this blood and our eyes did not see. Atone for your people Israel that you have redeemed, O Hashem. Do not place innocent blood in the midst of your people Israel. Then the blood shall be atoned for. And as Rashi, based on the Medrash, notes, what does it mean our hands have not spilled this blood? This declaration seems almost ludicrous. Did anyone suspect the elders of murder? They mean to say they did not know the traveler and no part in allowing him to go on his lonely way without food or escort. The law of Egla Rufa is the law that teaches us the importance of Levaya, the importance of escorting somebody. The elders are making a statement by saying that anyone who's come through our city, we have ensured that they've had a place to stay, and they've been escorted to their next location, or they've been escorted out, really, of this city. And this is the statement that the elders make. Since we have done our part, we therefore claim no guilt for the eventual ending of this person. How does this connect with Yaakov and Yosef? So we know the Torah tells us that when Yaakov sent Yosef to see the Shlom Echav and Shlom Hason, how the brothers were, the pasuk says, Vayishalchehu me'emek Chevron, and he sent him from the valley of Chevron. And we know geographically that Chevron's not in the valley, Chevron's on a mountain. So it's explained by the Mefarshim that Yaakov Avinu escorted Yosef all the way down the mountain in order to do the mitzvah of Levaya, the mitzvah of escorting him down. Yosef then turned to his father, over 100 years old, and says, Abba, this is a very large climb for you to climb back up. Why are you going out of your way to escort me? At which point Yaakov Avinu then taught Yosef this halacha. He says, let me tell you why I'm escorting you. because it's a big mitzvah of escorting somebody, to make sure you have done your part, that the person has been accompanied part of the way, and that's a shmirah, that's a protection for the person. And hence, this therefore becomes the last law that Yaakov taught Yosef. It was the law of the Egla Rufa, the law of accompaniment. And therefore, Yosef now, by sending the agalot, the wagons, which is a similar word to Egla, the calf, is telling his father that he has not forgotten the lessons that he learned. He has not forgotten the teachings. And he's reminding him of the last thing that they learned together, the law of the Egla Rufa. It brings to mind, many of the modern day commentators bring the story down, a story that happened in the times of the Gra, where a woman was married and her husband disappeared, walked off the face of the earth. And 30 years later, a man comes to the door and says, "I'm your lost husband." And she began asking him questions, and he knows all the answers. And she asks him questions about intimate details of their lives, and he knows all the answers. But she's still not 100% convinced that this is indeed her husband. And they go to the Gra and they ask him what she should do. So the Gra says, tell this man to go to the shul and ask this man, where was his makom kavua? Where was the place that he used to stand in daven when he lived in the city? They brought the man to shul and they asked him this question. And lo and behold, the man couldn't answer this question. And that's what the Gra says. And this man, at that point, admitted that and confessed that he was an imposter, that he had gained a lot of information, but he never thought to ask such a question. And that's what the Gra says, that it's not only a question of the physical aspects of a person, but what really marks a person is their spiritual aspects as well. The fact that Yaakov is told that Joseph is alive is one thing, but the fact that Joseph is alive spiritually and remembers the last lesson that he learned, that's the key, that's the crucial part for Yaakov's spirit to be revived. The question we need to ask is, what indeed is a deeper message that's being sent here by Yosef to his father? It is on one level, and perhaps the most simple level, that he's remembered what he has taught, what he was taught by his father. But clearly there are deeper implications that this medrash is teaching us. Clearly there are deeper lessons that Yosef is hinting at to his father that teach us worlds within our own lives as well. I'd like to mention very briefly the first approach is the Emes LeYaakov, then take a look at the Maharal and understand the Maharal on two different levels completely, and then conclude with an insight of the Pirkei Torah of Gifter Zatzal. The first approach by Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky Zatzal and Emes LeYaakov is very fascinating. According to the Talmud, he notes that the reason why Yaakov originally did not believe the brothers is that when one lies to a person, it's very hard for them to hear the truth later on. The brothers really told it untruth. They said, Hakerna, recognize his coat? Wonder what happened to it? They weren't completely honest with what happened to Yosef HaTzadik's coat, how it became full of blood. And therefore now, when the brothers are telling the truth, Yaakov Avinu's heart is not open to accepting the truth. So therefore, says Rabbi Yaakov, and not all the commentators agree to this, that they repeated to him, Ekol Divrei Yosef, all the words of Yosef, including the fact that Yosef said, don't worry that you sold me, because it was for a greater purpose. They told their father, according to this approach, what they had done and what Yosef had said. And therefore, the message found in the Egla Rufa, in the Agala, in the wagons, is the final message of the Egla Rufa, of Kaper Lamcha Yisrael, forgive the people of Israel, and then the blood shall be atoned for. And this was the message that Yosef was telling his father. Uchemochem bivanav shemitvadim al havon shebiadam v'shavim b'leiv shalem al ktonat hatvula badam. Likewise, the brothers who are confessing of their sins and returning, you should forgive them as well, v'nechpar lehem adam, so that the blood that they spilled should be forgiven. And this is the first message that Yosef is giving his father, that forgive the brothers, they are asking for forgiveness, v'nechpar lehem adam, and allow this blood to be forgiven. That's level one.
The second and third level that I'd like to develop more in depth is based on an insight of the Maharal of Prague that I think we can understand on two completely different levels. The Maharal explains that although one is halachically required to accompany his friend no more than 4 amos, which is approximately 8 feet, even that levaya suffices to show the one being accompanied that he is not alone but is connected to others. This special connection gives the one accompanied the merit of the tzibur of the public, which is a potent protection against harm. Explains the Maharal very beautifully that when you accompany a person, even if it's dalet amos, even if it's a very short amount, what you are basically saying is that this individual is not alone, that this individual is connected to somebody else, and hence this individual is connected to the tzibur, connected to the larger congregation. And therefore, although an individual may not be worthy of special shmira, special protection, the tzibur, the congregation, is usually worthy of this shmira, of this protection. And therefore, when you accompany a person, you're making the statement that the individual is not alone, but rather is connected on a larger level to a larger group, to a larger whole. Let's try to understand this Maharal on the first level, based primarily on the Nesiva Shalom. To appreciate the Nesiva Shalom, let's understand a little bit the relationship between Yaakov Avinu and Yosef HaTzadik. The Torah tells us that now Israel loved Yosef more than all of his sons, since he was a child of his old age, ki ben zikunim hulo. And Rashi gives a number of interpretations what ben zikunim hulo. One interpretation is he is the child of his old age. But however, the question on that is, we know Binyamin was also born to Yaakov at a late age, even later than Yosef. A second interpretation is that Yosef was a wise son to him. We know Zakein is really Zeshekanach Chochmah, one who has acquired wisdom. That whatever Yaakov Avinu learned in the yeshiva Shem Va'ever, he gave over to Yosef. And the third approach is that Yaakov and Yosef resembled themselves physically. And a lot of what happened to Yosef happened to Yaakov. His brother hated him. He had to flee. He had to go to Golos, to exile. A lot of the same trials and tribulations happened to both of these people. But we see that it's as if Yaakov and all of who Yaakov Avinu was, and everything that Yaakov Avinu developed within himself, this is what he gave over to Yosef. Yosef was like his prime pupil. As Rav Yaakov notes, he almost intuited that Yosef would go through tremendous trials in life and therefore needed this extra time to invest into him. Indeed, this aspect of developing oneself completely and giving over that developed self into one's child is really what parenting is all about. In Rabbi Leib Kellerman's book, To Kindle a Soul, an excellent book on parenting, he notes in his epilogue, only one who has learned to bring forth his own potential can succeed in helping other children and students draw forth their latent greatness. And he says that great parenting and teaching require great parents and teachers, people who are themselves truly great human beings. No amount of pedagogic technique or psychological insight will substitute. One must not only struggle to teach others, one must struggle to educate oneself. And he notes that one of the mystical underpinnings of human transformation is the profound principle that human greatness is passed like a flame from one candle to another. And he brings down a fascinating statement of the Rambam Maimonides. In talking about Aliyah L'Regel, going up as a pilgrimage to Jerusalem, Maimonides notes the law in the following way. He says, if a child is capable of holding his parent's hand, that his parent must take him to the Temple Mount, and there the parent presents himself in his child. Maimonides does not write that a parent presents himself with his child. He says that a parent appears in his child. How? Young children inherit their parents' spiritual achievements and failings. My child's trek begins where my journey ends, and his starting point thus reveals what aspects of my greatness I've actualized. He mirrors my kindness, patience, honesty, and self-discipline, or my lack thereof, usually in exaggerated proportion.
He may advance further or regress when he grows older. But now, my young child, is faithful testimony about who I truly am. In the facades we put on for others, we demonstrate our potential. Through our children, we reveal our reality. We cannot give to others, continues Rabbi Kelman, what we ourselves fail to possess. We must ignite our own growth process before we can pass the torch to others. Child raising thus becomes a task that begins long before children arrive and is conducted as much in their absence as their presence. It's the all-consuming process of firing up our own soul and then passing that flame to our children. With this in mind, of the concept of the parent needing to develop oneself and then giving that entire self to others, we can appreciate the first level, the Maharal, the concept of what escorting is all about, based on the writings and the insights of the Slomin Rebbe Zatzal and the Siva Shalom. And he notes that the moment that Yaakov Avinu escorted Yosef, he is not only physically escorting him, but rather shemikovach zesh Yaakov livauto, from the power inherent in the fact that Yaakov is escorting him, vahayam mikushar elav, and he was connected to him. Therefore, avar b'shalom mikol aderech beruchnius ubegashmius. This is what allowed him, Yosef, to be successful in going through the trials both of the spiritual and physical nature. She says, Shamar alav, it watched over him, kol hazman, all the while, ve'violi dekach shuchai v'moshel b'chol ar tzitrayim, and allowed him to live both physically and spiritually and to rule over Egypt. What the Nesiva Shalom is saying is very powerful. That Yaakov Avinu escorting Yosef is saying that Yaakov is now connecting his entire being with Yosef. That although Yaakov may physically not be able to be with Yosef HaTzadik at all times, he's very much connected to him, and he's very much giving over his entire being to Yosef. And because of that connection, that escorting is the aspect of the spiritual connection between the two, as the Maharal points out, that allowed Yosef to be able to survive in Egypt. And indeed, says in the Siva Shalom, this explains why we know a tzaddik should be able to accept the Kadosh Baruch Hu's decrees. How come Yaakov Avinu refused to accept the fact that Yosef was no longer around? How come the pasuk tells us that he was not able to get nichumim, he was not able to be comforted by everyone who tried to comfort him? Why couldn't he just accept it? So says in the Siva Shalom that this was a divine will that he should not accept it. V'zeh haya ritzon Hashem sheYaakov lo yinachem v'lo yashlim im zeh sheYosef einenu. He didn't want this. V'zot me'atam, and this is for the reason, to kol yishuato shel Yosef, the only salvation Yosef had, hayatam mikoach hitkashrut liYaakov, was his attachment to Yaakov. Shehu haya mikushar liYaakov, v'Yaakov haya mikushar elav. It was the attachment that they both felt. Had Yaakov for one moment in his mind thought that Yosef was no longer around, he would have cut off that intense attachment, and Yosef HaTzadik would never be able to survive. It's the model, continues in the Siva Shalom, that when Yosef is presented with that tremendous challenge and test of Mrs. Potiphar, what comes to Yosef's mind? The Dmut Yuknosha Lavi, the image of his father. It was that image of his father that saved him from this terrible sin. It's the mashal, says the Nesiva Shalom, of a person who's drowning in the river, in the ocean, and someone throws out a life vest for him. As long as he's holding on to that life vest, he's okay. He lets go, he's lost. The life vest of Yosef HaTzadik in Egypt, in all the terrible temptations he had, was the fact that he was connected to his father, and his father was connected to him. And this explains so beautifully that famous pasuk in our parsha we began with, where Yosef says, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef, Ha'od Avichai, is my father still alive? And the obvious question is, or number of questions are, We know that Joseph knew that his father was still alive. That was the whole argument of Yehuda, that if Binyamin isn't brought back, what's going to happen to Yaakov Avinu? And further, if he's trying to create a feeling of love among the brothers, why doesn't he say Ha'od Avinu Chai? It's our father, plural, alive. Why Ha'od Avi Chai, individual? Explains in the Siva Shalom very powerfully. He says, V'yesh lomar, shelo hayazot betur shela, this really wasn't a question. V'al kein lo matzimu shanu lo achim al kach, and therefore the brothers did not answer this. Ella rather shamar lahem, he said to them, Sha'ani Yosef, I am Yosef. Oto Yosef, the same Yosef, kishayiti, as I was originally. What, from where? Mikoach she'od avi chai. It comes from the fact that my father is still alive. Mikoach ha'hitkashrut she'avi chai bekirbi. From the fact that I am connected with my father being alive within me. Mikoach ze'ani oto Yosef, it's this that allows him to be Yosef. Vani Moshe b'chol Eretz Yitzrayim, that he's ruling over all of Mitzrayim. This is the message that Yosef said, and what a powerful message. Yosef says to his brothers, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef. Do you know what has allowed me to be Yosef? What's allowed me to be Yosef is Ha'od Avi Chai, that my father is still very much alive within me, that I've never lost that connection between me and my father. And this explains in the Siva Shalom, is this message that Yosef was giving to his father by sending those wagons. He's reminding him not only that he remembers what he's learned, it's much deeper than that. He's saying to his father, I've never forgotten that connection that we've had together. I've never forgotten the message of the Egla Rufa, the message of the Maharal, that you can accompany a person and spiritually be connected to that person. I've always been connected to you. I've never stopped thinking about you. And therefore, I'd like you to come down to Egypt so we can reconnect physically as well. And indeed, I believe that this first level in the Siva Shalom has tremendous lessons for us as well. We know, as in the Siva Shalom, and Parashat Korach speaks about, that Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world in zugos, in pairs. Shemayim and Aretz, heaven and earth. You have Olam Hazen, Olam Haba, this world and the next world. And says in the Siva Shalom, the common denominator is the concept of zugos, of pairs, of Mashpia and Mekabel, of one who gives, one who influences, and one who receives the influence. The Rav and Talmud, the parent-teacher, parent-child-student-teacher relationship. It's the model the Bermayim Chaim gives of a pit of water, that if you just fill it up with water and leave it, the water will evaporate, it'll become stale. The water has to at all times be connected to a source of water, that it constantly feeds it, that the water remains alive and vibrant. That has to be the relationship between a parent and student, and a parent and child, student, teacher. And this works both ways. A child has to view their parent as being a link in the chain of Sinai, that the parent is the one who gives to them so much, and that they always have to have that parent in their focus of their mind, because the parent gives them so much guidance and so much direction. It's the reason, explains the Rav, why the Rambam, in codifying his book of laws, that he puts the laws of Kibbud Av V'Em, of honoring, respecting one's parents, in Hilchos Mamrim, in the sixth chapter. What is Hilchos Mamrim about? We know it's about the concept of the Sanhedrin, of the court of Jewish law, the great court of Jewish law, how they transmitted the oral tradition, and how one had to listen to them. And likewise, says the Rav, by putting the laws of Kibbud Av V'Em, of respecting and honoring one's parents, within these laws, what the Rambam is saying is that parents are really part of this transmission, just like the high court is, of a certain tradition, of the Shema B'nim Musar Avicha Ve'al Titosh Tarati Mecha. This is a tradition we learn from the father, the Musar Avicha, and from the mother, the Tarati Mecha. And that explains, says the Rav, one of the reasons why a mourning for a parent is 12 months, while for every other relative is only a month. Even though a person can be married to their spouse for 50 years and have left home at a very young age, because one is not only mourning the individual, one is really mourning the link in the chain that has now been broken, that you no longer have that relationship that you had previously. And that's why the mourning is a much longer period. And just like a child always has to look to the parent as the mashpia, as the one who gives, as Yosef always had the dmut yuknosha l'aviv in his mind, it works the other way as well. According to the Jewish tradition, Rabbi Kelman notes, anyone who is responsible for others, anyone who's been given a precious trust, is obliged to pray for them. A rabbi must pray for his community, a teacher must pray for his students, and how much more so, a parent must pray for his children. I learned this lesson so beautifully a number of weeks ago, where I saw really what it means that a person understands what a precious trust they have, and they have to pray for them. I said, a number of weeks ago, our little one was scheduled for minor outpatient surgery, and I had told her teacher, a kindergarten teacher, 4 years old, that she would be missing Tuesday for pre-op and Wednesday for the surgery. Indeed, Tuesday she was not in school, and Tuesday afternoon they call us from the hospital that her surgery is scheduled for 12:30. They go in order of the age of children, and a four-year-old is already old compared to real infants and toddlers. We know that a child cannot eat on the day of surgery, so I had a quandary. How do I keep her home all morning without eating? So I figured the best thing to do was to bring her to school, and that way she'd be distracted, and take her out before snack time, and deal with it that way. So bright and early, I took her to school Wednesday morning, and the teacher was very surprised. She said, I thought that your daughter was having surgery today. So I explained to her the surgery was scheduled for the afternoon, and that I'd rather keep her preoccupied in the morning in class. The teacher said to me the following, a teacher who herself has, thank God, a large family, she says, you should know I got up especially early this morning to say some chapters of Psalms, of Tehillim, for the welfare of your daughter. And this very simple remark touched me so deeply, because this is the model of what a teacher is about. A teacher is one who understands they have a precious trust. It could be 4 years old, it could be 40 years old. If you understand you have a precious trust, then you're obliged to pray for that person and do all that you can for that individual. This is the first understanding of the Maharal. Our second understanding of this Medrash is that Yosef was saying to his father, Ani Yosef Ha'odavichai, you've been very much alive within my mindset, and that is what has kept me going this entire time. The second level is brought down in Rabbi Leff's books, Outlooks and Insights. And he notes that it seems that the Torah explicitly states that it was Paro who commanded Yosef to send wagons to transport the family, and that Yosef sent wagons according to the word of Paro. If the wagons were sent at Paro's behest, where was there a hint to the Egla Rufa? And since the wagons were needed to transport Yaakov's family, where did Yaakov see an added hint linking the wagon with the calves? So explains Rabbi Leff very, very interestingly. He says that Paro told Joseph, and now I command you to do the following. Take for yourselves from the land of Egypt wagons for you and your wives, and transport your father and come here. And do not be concerned about your possessions, for the best of land of Egypt will be yours. Paro greatly desired that Joseph's whole illustrious family come to live in Egypt, and he wanted them to be as comfortable as possible and to blend into the Egyptian society, and therefore he instructed Yosef to send wagons for the people, but not for the possessions. The possessions, they would buy the latest Egyptian furniture and latest Egyptian wardrobe and settle into society. Continues Rabbi Leff, Yosef, however, knew that if this plan were conveyed to Yaakov, he would never descend to Egypt. Thus, Yosef sent wagons according to the word of Paro, but not exactly according to the command of Paro, but in accord with Paro's intention of enticing Yaakov to Egypt. Yosef added wagons for their possessions so that they could recreate totally the environment of Eretz Yisrael in Egypt and remain insulated from Egyptian society and culture. Thus, Yaakov's family went down to Egypt, and the Torah tells us, with all their livestock and all their possessions which they acquired in the land of Canaan. Therefore, when Yaakov saw the wagons that Paro had sent and was informed of the extra wagons that Yosef added for their possessions, it revived his spirit. He recognized that Joseph understood the importance of guarding against possible assimilation and the need to remain insulated from Egyptian culture. How does this tie in to the concept of the egg larufa? So he says something very interestingly. He says that this is really the Maharal. Remember, the Maharal says that if somebody accompanies somebody else, so it's as if you are connected to the person who's accompanied you. There's like the spiritual connection, although they physically may be far away. Continues Rabbi Leff, the mitzvah of Levaya, of escorting somebody, shows us that a person's physical location is not as significant as the spiritual locus to which he is attached. One can be physically alone, yet spiritually connected to the body of the Jewish people through his connection to the one who escorts him on the beginning of his journey. Similarly, one may physically be in Galus, far from the land of Israel, but spiritually connected to it. Yaakov's realization that Yosef still lived in the Maharal is saying that although Yosef was not physically in the land, he was very much connected to Eretz Yisrael. He never lost that connection. And that's what he's saying to his father. Come down to Egypt and recreate Eretz Yisrael here. It's not as if that Yosef had become acclimated to the Egyptian society and forgot his roots. No. Although he was physically in Egypt, he was spiritually very much connected to Eretz Yisrael. And you see this in the fact that when Yosef presented his brothers to Paro, he says, "My brothers and my father's household who are in the land of Canaan have come to me," hinting to them that they were not from the land of Canaan, but still in the land of Canaan, despite temporarily residing in Egypt. And Rabbi Lev concludes this essay that Chazal tell us, our rabbis tell us, that the study halls and shuls and gullus are part of Eretz Yisrael transplanted to foreign soil. It is in them and around them that we must build a temporary physical dwelling place that is spiritually rooted in the holiness and purity of Eretz Yisrael. As long as one is physically prevented from being in Eretz Yisrael, he must transplant Eretz Yisrael to foreign soil. In this way, the Jew insulates himself from assimilating into the host society and culture. This is the second understanding of the Maharal, the third level. That Joseph is saying to his father, these wagons are here for your possessions. These wagons represent the Egel Arufa, that I've been escorted from Eretz Yisrael. I am connected to Eretz Yisrael. I've never lost that lesson. And with this, perhaps we can understand a little bit deeper the Medrash that says that Rashi brings down that in the end of last week's Parsha, when the brothers come down with Yosef, they eat and they drink. And the Medrash says, from the day that Yosef was sold, he had not drunk wine until that day. What does this mean? So if we look at the Maharal on the Pasuk by Noach, when he planted a vineyard and got drunk, and it says, Vayitgal betocha olo, and he became revealed in his tent, and it was a very negative aspect about Noach, explains the Maharal that our rabbis say from the word Vayitgal, that he reveals himself in his tent, that's the same word as galut, as exile, and that wine leads to exile, wine leads to galus. Explains the Maharal, what's the connection between wine and galus? So he says the concept of a person is that their mind is always connected to God. The seichel is what connects us, our mindset, to God. And through drinking, through being drunk, one loses that connection. And when one is no longer connected with God, that's what galus is all about. That's what exile is all about. Continues the Maharal, and he says, "Ki mi shehu golem mimkomo, one who is exiled from his place, yatsa mehestero v'nir'e b'makom acher, leaves their hiding place and is found in a different place." What does this mean? What the Maharal is saying is a very powerful idea. That a person who is not aware of their status, is not aware of what level they should be on in their avodas Hashem,
such a person who's not a bar das and does not have an understanding is leaving their point of self, is leaving their point of hefter, of the concealment, and they are now found in a different place. They are now found in galus. Keep in mind that Vayitzgal b'tocha alo is that Noach is found in his tent and is still in galus, within his tent. That a person can physically be in a certain place and yet be in galus. You could be standing in front of the Kosel Maravi davening, but if you're not connected to the place where you should be in your Avodas Hashem and your Dveikos to Hashem, so such a person could be in galus. Wine is a medium that brings a person that separation of knowledge of self and leads the person to galus. Yosef HaTzadik not drinking wine is making a statement that I refuse to be cut off from my mindset to the aura, to the spirituality of Eretz Yisrael, to the place where I know I am connected. By Yosef refraining from drinking, he was maintaining that dveikus, that connection to Eretz Yisrael at all times. And that's why we could perhaps say that it's only when the brothers come back, to come down to Egypt, and he's physically with his brothers, does he allow himself to drink because he recognizes that now he's physically connected to that which was he was holding on to dear life on a spiritual level. This is the second message of, third message of Yosef to Yaakov, second understanding of the Maharal, that he never lost his place. He never lost his identity. He was not Vayitzgal b'tocha alo. He was not one who was found in galus. He was constantly connected to that place, to the source, to the point of departure, that dveikus to Hashem. That's the second lesson of this Maharal, the third message of Yosef to Yaakov. The final message is brought down in the Pirkei Torah of Rav Gifter. And he says the message which the wagons conveyed can also be explained as follows. In Parshas Vayeshev, the Torah relates that Yaakov sent Yosef to visit the brothers, hoping that by spending time together, the brothers and Yosef would iron out their difficulties and make peace. To instill within Yosef true feelings of brotherly love, Yaakov studied with him the laws of Egla Rufa. One of the fundamental basics of this law is the extent of the brotherliness which Jews must feel for one another. Every individual Jew is part of a greater entity of Klal Yisrael. Yaakov hoped to infuse Yosef with similar feelings. We are all part of one family, and there's no room for dissension. By sending the Agalos and alluding to the Egla Rufa, Yosef was conveying the message that despite his having spent the last 22 years in corrupt and evil surroundings, he was still in the same frame of mind as when his father had sent him to visit his brothers. That is, he still recognized what family represents and how essential family unity is. And therefore, he's sending those wagons in order for his family to be able to come down to Egypt. The final lesson Rav Gifter is teaching us is the Egla Rufa is the lesson of brotherly love. It's the lesson of feeling a responsibility, one person for another. Where all of the Jewish people have to gain forgiveness and atonement for this individual who was murdered. There is a collective responsibility. There's an achdus, there's a unity among the Jewish people. This is the lesson that Yaakov was teaching Yosef on his way to visit his brothers. This is the lesson that Yosef now is saying to Yaakov, I remember that lesson. I still feel that brotherly love. I want the entire family to come down and to live as one family in Egypt. Perhaps that's the final idea. The Yaakov Lech HaTov brings down Rav Beifus, that there's some girsas, some texts of Rashi that do not allude to this medrash of the Egla Rufa, but rather to Agolos Mamish, to literally wagons. And that the last thing that Yaakov and Yosef learned about is how the princes would bring wagons. Every prince would bring one ox, and together they would share one wagon. Two princes would come together for one wagon in order to transport the items in the Mishkan. And this message of the agalos, of the wagon, that two princes came together to bring, to use, to allow the Mishkan to be transported, it's the same lesson as its last level of Rav Gifter. That there are two ways of service of God. There's the oxen where every individual has to serve God. Every individual is incumbent to do mitzvos. And then the second part where people have to come together and join forces together in order to serve God. And this is the message of Achdus, the message of unity, where the princes came together to donate a wagon, where the Egla Rufa is a concept of brotherly love as well. And the message that Joseph is saying to his father, the message that we need to learn from this Medrash, is no matter what happens between people, there has to be a level of forgiveness, there has to be a level of unity, and the key aspect of Judaism is the collective responsibility, the arevas, that every Jew must feel toward the other. And this is the message that Yosef is sending to his father. This crucial message of arevos, of collective responsibility, is something he's learned and something he'll never forget. And therefore, in conclusion, what we've seen is that when Yaakov sees these wagons and that Yosef sent to transport him, then his spirit was revived. On a deeper level, we understand that these wagons had many messages that Yosef was saying to his father. Level number one, forgive the brothers. Level number two, that I've never lost that connection to you. A child must always be connected to a parent, and likewise a parent to a child. Level number three, that although Yosef was physically in Galus, he was spiritually very much connected to Eretz Yisrael. He never lost that connection. We who are in Galus have to create our own level of connection. And we have to make sure that we are as connected as possible to the true level of self, and to try to mitigate our own personal exile, our own personal galus, from being estranged from God. And to create an environment of Eretz Yisrael, of holiness, even when we're not found physically on holy soil. And the final lesson is the message of arevos, of communal responsibility one to each other, and Yosef saying to his father, he never forgot that lesson, and he feels that closeness, that brotherly love that his father was trying to inculcate to him at that fateful day of the final parting of Yaakov and Yosef together, the message of communal love and responsibility that we need to take as an inspiration in our own lives.